Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in on what has been an unbelievably eventful day in college football news, and none of it really involves actual football. I guess it does technically involve actual football because these are guys that are wanting to play, that the SEC has decided cannot play. The league has laid down their rules similarly to that of the Big Ten. The Big 12 and the ACC will do theirs tomorrow. And at least for now, the former NFL contracted players will not be playing in the SEC for now. I do think this will hold up much better than NCAA rules hold up, but we'll see. But that went down today. And we'll talk about that a little bit, although most of it will be rehashing of what we did on Sunday. But then I've got a lot. I think, let me make sure I count correctly. I've got 7 different cuts from Pete Golding's press conference. There was a lot there. And so we'll play some of that for you as well on this edition of the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and like the video, leave a comment, hit the notification bell. Also, wherever you get your podcasts, just search Rebel Report. And if you like what you hear, leave a rating and a review. This edition of the podcast is brought to you by a freshly renewed contract with our good friends, speaking of contracts, at Scruggs in Saltillo, Mississippi. Unbelievable people and an unbelievable store. We get to go there every so often for the radio show, and it is an incredible place, and I cannot believe that they have, when I say everything that you need under one roof for inside or outside of your home or for your property, I quite literally mean it. It is a huge place. If you're doing home improvement projects, they've got you covered. If you're looking for appliances, they've got you covered. If you're wanting to improve your garden or your lawn, they've got you covered. Your property, your hunting property, or your land, or your farm, they've got you covered. Even a great selection of clothes and boots and more. But most importantly, they've got America's tractor, the John Deere. 0% financing on all of these John Deeres, varying months, but 0% on all of these John Deeres. Commercial mowers, 0%. Compact tractors, 0%. 5-series tractors, 0%. Zero-turn mowers, 0%. If you want a Gator, you can get it for just 1.9% at Scruggs. When you go, tell them that it was me that sent you there, and they will take care of you. They will regardless because they're just good Mississippi people like you. But tell them that I sent you. You'll help me and them out if you do that. I'm looking forward to getting back up there again in the not-too-distant future. And it's always a good time hanging out at Scruggs. Go by and see them. So you guys saw it today. I know you did. The Big Ten did it first, which, by the way, I think that it is incredibly disappointing, in my opinion, to see the SEC yet again not take the lead on something. And I'm sure that it was a little bit more complex because the Big Ten doesn't have Lane Kiffin trying to do what he's doing in their league. So it's a little bit easier to pass something like this through. But still, the Big Ten yet again was ahead of the SEC on something. The Big Ten did it first. You guys know already, former contracted NFL players trying to come back to college, some of them trying to enter the transfer portal, thanks to some, the most famous one is the Louisiana court, but there's courts all over the country trying to allow that to happen. The schools, the conferences have had enough. They are stepping in, and they are creating their own rule to try to stop it. The Big Ten did it early. The SEC did it this afternoon. Again, the other two Power Four leagues are going to do so tomorrow. The group of six are also talking about it, getting involved. This is what we talked about last time. They have decided, and by they I mean the conferences, they have decided to dig in on players that sign professional contracts and prevent them from coming back to school. Greg Sankey, as we talked about last time, did not step in on the Diego Pavia ruling, and that has since taken care of itself. Greg Sankey and the SEC did not get involved in the Trinidad Chambliss case, and that has also taken care of itself. There will be no more red shirts, no more waivers or anything like that. So that situation will not happen anymore moving forward. So the NCAA lost in court. The SEC didn't try to step in because they know after this year, because of the 5-for-5 and the NCAA not giving waivers or anything like that anymore, a case like that won't happen because there won't be the, well, that player got a waiver for a medical red shirt, but that player didn't. None of that's going to happen anymore. So that has taken care of itself. I think that's probably a major reason why the SEC did not get involved with that, because it's ultimately taking care of itself. And that case was different than Pavia, which is different than this, which is different than that. And they're all different, and trying to loop them all in as the same, as we talked about on Sunday, is an intellectually dishonest thing to do at best. And we don't need to get into all of that. There are clear differences, and it's obvious to people thinking clearly that there are differences, easy to define differences, between junior college years, medical red shirts, and going professional and trying to come back to school and gambling on sports and coming back to school. Like those things, even though they all involve judges, and because they all involve judges, they are comparable, but the cases themselves are different because, again, if you're thinking, I hate to be flippant, but if you're thinking with your brain, you can come to the conclusion that the Sorsby case is different than the Pavia case, and that's different than the Chambliss case, and that's different than the Daquan Wright case. They're all different, even if they ultimately come to the same conclusion. The SEC, the Big Ten, and these conferences have decided to draw the line at players signing professional contracts, getting paid by professional teams domestically, and trying to come back to school. They have decided that this is the bridge too far, and this is where they're digging their heels in and trying to fight. So the SEC released part of it today. We're going to get more details of this tomorrow, but their initial release said this right here. An SEC institution is not permitted to have an athlete on its roster who has, number one, previously declared for the NFL, NBA, or WNBA draft and did not appropriately withdraw. Two, signed a contract with an NFL or other professional football league, NBA/G League, or WNBA or affiliate team, or been listed on an NFL or other professional football league, NBA, G League, or WNBA roster. The commissioner is authorized to enforce this expectation with penalties against member institutions. Ross Dellinger added that the SEC presidents who voted unanimously on this, 16-0 was the vote. And no, more on that in a second. But unanimously, the presidents gave Greg Sankey, quote, full and unlimited authority, end quote, which includes suspending a school from competition. League bylaws grant the commissioner powers to deem a player ineligible, suspend coaches/administrators, and more. It was a unanimous vote. Now, on that note, it was reported earlier today that 14 of the 16 SEC schools were in favor of this. One of them was undecided. One of them was against it. That is LSU. I'd be willing to bet. I don't know this. This is, you know, adding, you know, conjecture and not adding fact, that LSU voted against its own head coach kind of holding their nose. Maybe it was clearly defined and communicated to them that they really had no choice in the matter. Whether it be the SEC's legal counsel presented a, hey, here's why you will lose, or I don't know, but the vote is unanimous. And now you have a situation where Lane Kiffin goes on Pat McAfee's show pleads his case the way he does and says the things that he does. And an hour later, his university president is voting against what he is trying to do. That's the dynamic that happened there today, which is fascinating in and of itself. I do believe that the SEC and the Big Ten and all of these conferences have a much better opportunity to defend this kind of rule than the NCAA does for a lot of reasons. We talked about those on Sunday. We don't need to necessarily rehash that as well, but they have a better chance to defend themselves. They believe that they will be able to successfully defend themselves against any kind of lawsuit that is presented against them. It sounds like representatives of Daquan Wright and Xavien Harris in particular are going to try to continue to fight this on their behalf. And we'll see where that goes. I simply do not believe that this is as simple as finding a friendly local judge and boom, the SEC has to make them play and cannot penalize LSU for that. I think that there will be a digging in from the league, especially when the school that these players are trying to play for voted against them playing for their team willingly. So I don't know where this goes. I do think that, again, the SEC has a better chance at defending itself here. The SEC had to act on this for reasons that, again, we talked about on Sunday. And I don't exactly know what happens yet, what happens next. I do think that when we get tomorrow, most of you are listening to this today on Wednesday, the league will have outlined more of what the penalties would be should they try to play these players. The Big Ten, for example, said that if an SEC team tried to if a Big Ten team tried to play one of these guys, the head coach would be suspended for half the season. That's quite penalizing. I wonder if the withholding of television rights money, you know, the $75, $80 million check that each school gets at the end of the calendar year can be withheld, things of that nature. But this is most certainly a situation where it's a little bit different than a lot of the court cases up until this point, because the NCAA did not have a lot of people supporting them in a lot of these fights. Even the Trinidad fight, which was criticized. I mean, you guys saw it. It was not universally loved that Trinidad got his eligibility back. People criticized that whole process and the decision that was made. But still, the NCAA does not have a particularly high Q rating, and people did not necessarily support their legal fight, at least not unanimously. This is a situation where the public at large is very, very overwhelmingly in favor of the conferences and their fight to block guys that played in an NFL game on Saturday under contract from enrolling in a college and playing for a college team on Sunday. This is a 99-1 issue, and the one are only people in Louisiana at this point. The public at large wants the conferences to succeed. It doesn't mean they will, but I do think that the SEC, the Big Ten, et cetera, will be able to take this out of a local court, out of Baton Rouge, and take this higher. If it even does get challenged and have a lot more success, because who's going to challenge the SEC? LSU, the institution, can't, because they just voted in favor of the SEC. So the individual players are going to sue a league to play for a school that voted again. It's going to happen. They're going to try. I just don't think that, boom, a judge is going to be able to just force LSU to take these players against their will, because, again, LSU voted against this. They agreed to not roster these players. LSU did. So a court is going to force LSU to accept these players. Maybe they do. but they certainly don't have to play them because they know what the league is capable of doing and what the league thinks that they can defend if they do. Maybe they're not able to, but we will see. We will see. I will say the last part of this, before we get to your comments, we'll read some of your comments and then we'll get to Pete Cutts. That's how we'll do this. But if, in fact, the SEC is able to defend this successfully and Xavier Harris and Daquan Wright cannot play for LSU this year, that's ultimately going to be a really sad deal for the two of them. Because I think Daquan Wright could have ended up being a practice squad guy, but he ghosted camp early, right? He got out of there but before cut day. Xavier Harris, obviously nobody's picked him up yet to be that, but training camp's also not over yet. But not only now have they, at least to some degree, made their prospects in the NFL a little bit more difficult. They've established that reputation there. I saw one NFL reporter say that an NFL scout told him that, especially with Daquan Wright, this won't be forgotten. That's unfortunate. But on top of that, their quote-unquote legacies at the school where they had success, maybe it's not completely destroyed. Maybe a lot of people will forget about this, but the thing that players do not consider when they make these decisions anymore is what happens 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. Where's home for you? What do you lean on? What do you fall back on? Because there are Ole Miss players that stopped playing decades ago that still benefit financially from the label of John Doe, former Ole Miss player. They still get customers in their businesses because they played at Ole Miss. They still have connections. They get invited back to that legacy is not just about look at that you won games and how cool is that, and you'll be honored 20 years from now on the field one time. It's deeper than that. Quinn Ewers specifically talked about this for why he declared for the NFL and didn't transfer from Texas, because being Quinn Ewers' former Texas quarterback gives him value for the rest of his life. And it's lesser with a tight end and a defensive tackle, but Daquan Wright and Xavier Harris would have had some amount of value among Ole Miss alumni for the rest of their lives. And instead, now, they're going to be the guys that went to the NFL and tried to come back to go play for LSU, and Greg Sankey and the presidents had to stop them from doing that. And they did all of that. They possibly ruined that legacy because Lane Kiffin told them to. And that's really sad. That's a sad deal that could have possibly been thrown away because of a situation like this. The long-term future was not considered here. Because again, I know, and it's like this with every school, it's not just Ole Miss, but I know people that benefit still to this day, decades after playing, because of that. Because, yeah, you played there. Yeah, I'll help you out. Yeah, I'll buy insurance from you. Yeah, I'll buy a house from you. Whatever the case. Yeah, I'll give you a job. Whatever the case may be. Would have been taken care of, and I don't know if it's going to be that simple anymore, and the likelihood that they're playing football 3 years from now is a lot slimmer than them being in the workforce 3 years from now at this rate. So that's a shame. At least I think so. All right, let's read some of your comments. You never know, the season was starting in a few days. No kidding. Funny how fast everything went, even though the Big Ten had to take the lead on something yet again. The Daquan Wright and Xavier Harris era at LSU was incredible, just different. Finally made it to another live. Just started my junior at Ole Miss. Absolutely love it. Awesome, Colin. Congratulations, man. Soak it in and enjoy it because it'll go by quick. Don't say no to much, man. Go to every game. Go to whatever party. Say yes to the date party invites, whatever it is. Just go do it. Go do it. Soak it in. Only real question left here is what legally can be fought against the SEC here, particularly with LSU. Maybe it's not even challenged with the power that the Sankey has now. No kidding. Daquan Wright and Harris era rivals that Aaron Rodgers jet. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I expect more lawsuits to come through the players. They have the right lawyers that are going to continue to try this for however long. But again, they can get a court to say all kinds of things. It doesn't mean that LSU has to play them. You know what I mean? If there's fear of a Lane Kiffin suspension or a withholding of television rights, then doesn't matter what a judge says about the player's eligibility. I don't know if I worded that really poorly. What I'm saying is a judge can say that, well, the player's allowed to play all they want, but can the judge say that the SEC is not allowed to punish the school when you're talking about voluntary membership? The president of the school voted in favor of this rule. It seems a lot more flimsy. It's a lot more flimsy when the president of the school did what he did today. LSU basketball is in a much more precarious situation. Yeah, and I guess Ole Miss possibly might be losing a player, although the Big Ten had a provision in their rule that they released today where if a player did not have a contract and was not paid by a pro team, he could go back to school. UCLA's got a linebacker that's going to be able to play because even though he got a mini camp tryout, he never got a contract, so he wasn't technically a rostered NFL player. I have not seen if the SEC has that. If the SEC has that, then the basketball player that committed to Ole Miss today very possibly never actually signed or was paid a pro contract. If that's the case, he might still be able to play. If he did sign a pro contract and was getting paid by a G League, in effect, NBA team to play, I don't think he should be allowed to play. I am the same way as these conferences where that is where I draw the line. You can talk me into things with eligibility because the waiver process, which I'm glad is going away, but like I'm okay with Will Whitson playing his seventh year at Mississippi State. I'm okay with Trinidad getting his year. I was okay with the junior college ruling because I don't think that's comparable to the NCAA, and I think that was a just ruling. I also draw the line at once you declare for a professional league and you get a professional contract, your opportunity to play college sports should be no more. And so we'll see what happens with this basketball player at Ole Miss. But the Big Ten forced the SEC's hand. You nailed this. Absolutely, they did. The SEC had to act. But the thing is, it seems like based on a lot of reporting that the SEC and the Big Ten feel as though they will rather easily be able to defend themselves. Lane should stop being so disingenuous about this stuff. Everyone knows who he really is, so just be the villain. Exactly. I mean, the fact that Pat McAfee allowed his show to be used again by the same person that used him at the end of last season with that weird recorded Key One interview. Oh, well. But I mean, literally an hour later, his president was voting against him after that. So I have no idea what the status is for the Prince Will and Devin Harper lawsuits. I have no idea. Anyone who was trying to say this was a one-year problem was hilariously wrong. I don't know how people say things like that. And of course, Twitter is just filled with people that are completely incapable of thinking with their brains. They have to have their hands held and everything is black and white and there's no gray at all. But I don't know how you can watch what you've seen over the last 6 years and think that if the conferences allowed this to happen, that next year you would not have a player that left after 4 years with 1 year left and tried to get drafted, signed a rookie contract, went through training camp and got cut, wouldn't try to come back to school. I don't know what planet that you live on where you can think that nobody would try that. Of course they would. Of course they would try that. They'd find a friendly local judge and get it done because it's what everybody else is doing. It's just nuts. Wonder what the future will be on international pro basketball players. So the SEC did not mention European leagues. And I think that's another gray area where some people have to use their brains and think with a little bit of nuance. In Europe, they don't have college basketball like they have here. So if you're a 17-year-old and you want to keep playing basketball, your only option is to go pro if you want to stay in your country. That's why some of these Euro pros that never declared for the NBA draft and never played in college are getting to come play in college, because that it's different. And you have to understand that there are complexities to each situation. But people, again, have no idea how to think with nuance. Hey, Michael, love your show. I'm beyond pumped about Lasasa's big win. He's truly a rebel great. Yeah, good to see you, Stephon Diggs. I mean, he held off John Rahm. That was cool. I am just, I've been against LIV for really since its inception. I understand that he got some money in the bank, and he probably would not have been afforded that opportunity had he tried to go the traditional route through the PGA Tour. So, good on him for winning. He's got some money now, and maybe he plays on whatever BS LIV 2.0 is. If he does, so be it. But it's been a joke since its inception. It's never been a serious operation. They blew, $6 billion and did not make any progress on becoming an actual viable league. It's always been a joke. So I understand why he did it financially. And again, good on him for getting a win. But I just, call me a cynic. It's not the same as getting a win on the PGA Tour. But again, I probably shouldn't say stuff like that here because I might upset some people. But I mean, it just doesn't and never moved me. And clearly, it never moved the mainstream golf fan, because nobody cares. Nobody cared enough to actually make it viable. The situation wouldn't happen again after this because players would have to declare for the draft. 2022 players didn't declare. David, I'm telling you though, man, I don't know how you can look at college football or college sports and think that a player that leaves and gets cut but still has eligibility would not try to come back. I don't know how you can watch what's happened over the last 6 years and think that that wouldn't be something that would happen, because it would. I promise you it would. Even in this college football landscape, there are still two commandments. Betting on sports gets you banned. And if you go pro, you shouldn't be able to play in college. 99-1 issue, like you said. Absolutely. Right about this. It really does ruin their ability to come back and be celebrated. Where do they go from here? The UFL. I guess they would play UFL in the spring. I hate to do this to you guys. I am going to skip some comments, though, because I do want to get to some of these peak cuts as well. I don't want to spend all night talking about this. So LSU went against Lane. I wonder how that will work out. They did. They voted against him today. They might have been forced to do it, like kind of kicking and screaming. The league, again, like I said before, the league very well could have presented them a lot of data that says, if you don't vote for this, you're going to have a lot of problems. But yes, they voted against their school's own interests. They voted against Will Wade. It's not just they didn't just vote against Kiffin. They voted against Will Wade as well. What is his team going to look like, and what is he going to do now? they're certainly going to try, I guess. But again, how is the school going to be involved in suits when they voted for this rule? They voted for it. Thank you for the $5 to say this, Dennis. Ole Miss talking crap about LSU, then getting a commitment from a former NBA player is laughable and what I expected from you guys. Here's the thing, Dennis. If he was at, like I said before, see, here's the thing that a lot of people are incapable of doing in the media space, especially in your neck of the woods, is people are incapable of having principles. If this player that committed to Ole Miss today was a contracted player under contract, getting paid by an NBA / G League organization, I do not think that he should be allowed to play. See how easy that is? It's so easy to have the same stance, even if it involves a school that you cover. You see how easy that is? I don't think, if in fact he was paid. Now, apparently that might not be the case. He may not have actually been under contract and may not have gotten paid. If that's the case, sorry, Dennis, you're going to see him suit up for Ole Miss this year. But if he was, I don't think he should be allowed to play. And I won't change my mind on that. Let's see. $6 billion can buy you a couple of natties. Oh, man, it can buy you more than that. It can buy you, a dozen or so of them, I guess. Now Lane's going to take credit for getting the rule implemented. Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but nobody's going to buy it. Nobody's going to buy it. See, and this is what you're missing here, Shane. You say, glad Ole Piss never used a local-friendly judge. They did. They did. But what you have to understand, something I said before, you may have just joined tonight, but what you have to understand is the issue that the conferences and 99% of sports fans in the country have with this, it's not about the judges. The judges are not what people have the issue with. It's the players having signed professional contracts, even if they got screwed, because they did with the 5-for-5 thing. They kind of got screwed there. The NCAA completely botched that. So that's part of this discussion as well. They got kind of screwed there. But it is very easy for everybody else in the country to understand that the issue is not the judges. That's not what people have a problem with. It's not a Baton Rouge judge did this, and so therefore it sucks. That's not what people have the issue with. People have the issue with guys that sign pro contracts and they're under contract and they participate in training camp and they play in these preseason games and then try to come back. And not only try to come back, they try to come back and transfer. That's what people have the problem with. So you guys are getting so caught up in the idea that, well, if you use a judge, you're the same. Diego Pavia is not the same as Brendan Sorsby, who's not the same as Trinidad Chambliss, who is not the same as Daquan Wright, even though they all used judges. Because people, most people, that don't live in that bubble can recognize that these situations are different, and they should be talked about and reacted to differently. Just because they all used a judge does not mean that they are all the same. If you get a speeding ticket, you break the law in the same way if you broke the law if you committed armed robbery. They're both against the law. You have to go to court for both of them. A judge is involved in both of them. One of them is worse than the other. So, you know, it's intentionally, intellectually dishonest to do it that way without discussing the differences in what the players did and are trying to do. And again, these guys got screwed on the 5-for-5 thing. They got screwed. They did. But what these conferences can't allow to happen if they want to continue to exist, is guys going pro, getting contracts, and trying to come back. They can't allow that to happen without a fight. Because at what point do you have a conference when you try to do stuff like that? It's that that's what it's frustrating about. And then stuff like this right here, because you have such a dishonest media, Shane, you have such a dishonest media that covers your team that I've seen multiple people this week with platforms that have perpetuated this lie right here that the judge asked for an autograph. That is not true. That did not happen. And it's irresponsible. And frankly, it turns any position that you could have that is valid, it totally causes people to dismiss it because of how, I keep using intellectually dishonest, but how incorrect that is. And to see multiple media members, forget Twitter accounts and online stuff, but media members in that state say that when it did not happen, it's hard to take a position seriously when you are able to get got so easily by no three sports. Was the judge friendly? Absolutely. Did I think it was embarrassing that he got emotional reading the ruling? Yes, I did. I thought that really removed a lot of the impact that the merits of the case did have, because I know you and the people who do media there that you consume didn't actually watch the case, or you didn't watch the trial. You didn't consume the merits. You didn't care enough to do that, especially when you say things like that. But, I really thought that those actions took away from what was a pretty compelling case. But when you either fall for AI or a fake, literally fake news, something that you have been told is not true multiple times, it has been verified that it's not true multiple times, and you still say it, it makes your position look foolish when you're so easily had by something so obviously fake and untrue. So, anyway, podcast is brought to you in part by Advantage Business Systems, absms.com, for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. Also, Logan Smith, Shelter Insurance, Auto Home Life, for insurance for your business. He's located in Brookhaven, but he will take care of you anywhere in the state of Mississippi. Because that's what he does. Auto Home Life, for insurance for your business. 601-823-3500. 601-823-3500. And also Priority One Bank. They make you their priority every day. Local loan servicing, decision-making, online banking platform, and more. It's in the name at Priority One Bank. They will make you their priority every single day. All right, let's move on from this and talk about some actual football. There's a lot in Pete Golding's 24-minute long press conference. It was it's not what you're used to, and that doesn't mean you're going to win more games or lose more games or somewhere in between. But it's still good and detailed. And let's get to some of those clips right now. First, he was asked about where things stand at right tackle. Obviously, position battle going on there. Left tackle is going to be Terrez Davis. That's locked in between Tommy Kinsler and Kern. Who stands out? Pete Golding was asked about that. Here's his answer.
What's the progress report on right tackle? Do you know what you guys are doing there yet, or is that still an open competition?
Yeah, it's still an open competition. I think, you know, Tommy has really, really flashed. I thought this second scrimmage, I thought he played really, really well for probably about 30 to 35 snaps I think that the tempo in which we play, right, and the amount of snaps right now that that position is going to have to play, I think we got to continue to get him in shape. Obviously, getting Kern back for progressive weeks in a row has helped, has flashed, has done some good things. Another guy that falls in that consistency category right now. So, you know, you're still looking, you know, obviously from that standpoint, how can we rotate a couple of guys for worst-case scenarios? And then what would one do better than the other, right, from a package standpoint? But, you know, we got this week to kind of decide that, and then we kind of made that decision next week. But I would say right now, definitely Tommy has, you know, probably flashed and been the most consistent up to this point.
You don't get that in college football very much anymore, that a coach will tell you a leader in a position battle before it has been decided. But I have heard that they're more comfortable than they were a few weeks ago at what they'll be able to do at right tackle. But you still, I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, you cannot love the fact that he's still talking about lack of consistency at right tackle. That needs to improve. Now, Kinsler on paper is a guy that you think can help. And again, he said he flashes brilliance and physically he's impressive. But, you know, 2 weeks away from the season, consistency, that they've got to figure that out and figure that out fast. So anyway, all right. He was asked about the young guys on the defensive line, specifically Landon Barnes, but a few others as well. Guys that very well could get some playing time earlier than expected. Here's what he had to say.
Speaking of freshmen, Jonathan Maldonado mentioned Landon, Carmelo Reed, Jaden Curtis. Obviously, that's his position group, but three guys that really have flashed to him and he's actually learned from too. What have you seen from those guys and just that freshman class, how have they adapted not only to the academic piece, but on the field, guys like Landon coming on and maybe contributing as soon as the opener?
Yeah, I mean, I think the benefit of that is getting them in, you know, in the spring. I think they got that transition time in the spring and all that. I think all three guys from a system standpoint are so much comfortable, you know, than they were in the spring, obviously with the reps from the summer and the fall camp. And then from a physicality standpoint, all three guys aren't the old school freshmen. I mean, they're different, you know, body types and skill sets and all those. But Landon's definitely flashed, like we talked about. You know, I think Jaden, I think, is the steal of that class. I really believe that, you know, as far as his upside. I think his quick pitch of the football, I think he gives us an element in pass rush, you know, even like potentially this year once you start getting later into the season. So I'm really excited about those three guys. And I think the further that we go, I think some of them will have roles. The good thing about it is they're seeing guys do it the right way in front of them. And it's cool when those older guys start talking about those young guys, but they're setting the right example for them, and they're following. So Coach Jordan does a great job with that group. But those three guys will be ready sooner than later. I think Carmelo still has a little more development to do probably than the other two, kind of by position, and not as big of a position in need. But Jaden gives you something different inside that we haven't had, especially at that age.
It's a pleasant surprise if you're hearing this. I am surprised that there are multiple guys, freshmen on the defensive line, that are expected to factor into the rotation, considering the amount of veteran depth that they have. So that tells you a lot, especially with Barnes. But you hear great things about how deep they are at defensive line, especially tackle. Hearing him mention tackle to the point where that they've got this uber talented young guy, but they don't feel like they're going to need him at least right away because of how much depth they have. That's got to feel good. Defense, there should not be much issues with talent on that side of the ball. Speaking of, how about the linebacker room? So they've got the two starters decided with Luke Farrelly, Keaton Thomas. Tajay Butler is somebody that it sounds like he's going to play a ton. But what about the rest of them, and do they have any faith in the depth at linebacker? Here is what he had to say there.
I think probably we were talking about this morning. We kind of evaluated our whole roster and had the player personnel department come in there. And Jarcobi Hobson is a guy that was an athlete out of Lake Cormorant coming out that played quarterback and safety that we transitioned to our money, our will linebacker, who kind of struggled last year learning it. processing it and reading, diagnosing the position. But I would say he's made the biggest strides from fall to this fall, and even from spring to fall. He's doing some really good things. So I think he's a guy in that room that's fighting for that fourth spot right now, that I think has kind of solidified himself. I think the two freshmen, Anthony Davis and J. Mike Garrett, are really talented. I think J. Mike plays at a different speed. Will have a role potentially on special teams based on that. And then I think Ant, when he lets it loose and he stops thinking so much, right, he is who we thought he was. But I think it's getting him to do that on a more consistent basis. But I would say right now you feel good about four. Raymond Collins has played at that position, right? A lot of special teams value as well. More of a specific role and packages, you know, for him to go in. So, but it has SEC experience and has been in the system as well. So, like I said before, you got some quality depth there that if it gets to that. And then I think it's important to have some other packages and get around some. You know, move Perkins around some. We can be able to stack him some based on what personnel you're going against. So I think you'll see that throughout the season some too.
Edwin, that last part about Centarian Perkins, I am curious to see how they use him, because I don't think that he's just going to line up at edge and just run after tackles and try to beat tackles all game. They moved him around a lot last year. I do think that you should believe them when they say he will be able to get after the quarterback more. But did you hear the way he put that? Depending on opponent and personnel, he'll line up at a true linebacker spot, or at least in that part of the field. And they need the depth. So what he said about having four that they believe in, that's encouraging, because there was a while where I was wondering, hey, you've got two that you believe in, but do you have any more than two? Sounds like they've got four and that they're comfortable with, and that's an encouraging thing, because last year at the end of the season, they had one that was actually an effective player in the Miami game, and he got hurt early in that game, and that was it at the position. So anyway, all right, speaking of defense, last thing defensively, he's asked about how Edwin Joseph said that in practice he's working on corner as well as safety, and the secondary is moving around a lot. He was asked about why that is, and here's what he said. This is good stuff here.
I think versatility is huge, like we talked about, but I think understanding conceptually is even more important. And guys normally don't communicate because they don't know what to do. When you start moving around and make them playing other spots, and they understand how they work together. And so I think that's been something big for us in the summer and in fall camp. Like, we teach that Lion, Free, and Ram, they're interchangeable spots. Like, you all got to know the same thing. And so I think it's really important to be able to move them around so they don't get comfortable, and it makes them communicate, and they don't become complacent, right? And they're always curious. I think Edwin's a little different in that mix, to where he's got the ability to play outside and inside. And so that is something with the corner depth as of lately that I've bumped him outside to make sure that he understands what to do at the corner position on top of the safety position. And he's looked really, really impressive.
I don't think.
Well, that's really interesting in a lot of ways. I you know, over the years, I'm sure you guys have heard that his defense is pretty complex. It takes a lot of communication and a lot of far cry from the days of the Crime Dog McGriff defenses, where they try to simplify and limit the menu. I've heard Pete Golding's defense has a pretty substantial menu, and you've got to do a lot of thinking. And sounds like that they're making sure that they're able to communicate clearly with each other, because if you don't know what a corner is supposed to do, how are you supposed to help him with his assignments and adjustments and stuff? So really, really interesting stuff there. Wide receivers is a position this offseason that a lot of people have talked about. He was asked about building depth beyond like the three guys that everybody expects to be the mainstay at the position, Deuce Alexander, for example. But after him, who is it going to be?
You know, Samari, talking about that same meeting we had this morning, you know, he got most improved from last year. You know, so he's really flash, plays without the ball. He's really, really competitive, shows toughness on tape. He's had some contested catches. Like, the kid was an all-conference free safety in high school. I mean, the kid's a really good athlete that plays with toughness. We see him as a four-core special team guy that's made a role for himself on offense. And be able to play just a couple different spots from a rotational standpoint. I think the other piece of that receiver room, I group the tight end room with it. You know, I mean, it's just the style of the offense in which we play and how who we kind of want to be. So I think once you, you know, you get past the Horatios of the world and the Cooks of the world and the Deuces of the world, you know, the other one to me is Caleb Cunningham's finally back healthy. I think he's a different presence than we've had out there. I think he is who we expected him to be here, you know, over a year ago. So been really nice to get him back out and healthy. It's just a different body type. I think Gil flashes, and I think it's kind of like we talked about last time. I think he has a good understanding of the offense. He plays fast at times. I think it's the consistency in doing that, but does give you a threat out there of real long speed with some size. Made a couple good plays in the scrimmage, which was good to see in some live environments. And then I think there's, you know, the guys like Samari and the Levi Blunts of the world, and there's going to be some other names like that you're going to look out there and like, who's that? That do a really good job of knowing the offense and are really tough and play extremely hard and aren't going to get you beat. And so there's going to be some of those guys that have roles that are going to be playing as well and rotating. But I think, you know, between Mike Smith, you know, and the Odoms of the world and the Hosses of the world, I mean, they're an integral piece to that. And so there's not going to be a lot of times where there's more than three out there. And so you don't got to get too deep. But some of the young guys are really coming on, I think. And if we can get them healthy, I think there's some other guys in that room that'll be able to show up probably game five, game six.
Really encouraging to hear from Caleb Cunningham. I mean, just super talented. You guys know all about that already. And I have a bet with Hey Dad on the radio show, over under 15 catches for Caleb Cunningham. And I've got the over, he's got the under, and I hope I win that. Little disappointed to hear that about Daryl Gill when they signed him. I thought he was going to be somebody that could be possibly a plug and play starter. And flashing is good, but consistency is better. And, you know, if he can find that, great, but at least they're not, I mean, you heard Pete Golding right there mention that they've got a starting three, it seems, with Jonte Cook, Horatio Fields, and, of course, Deuce Alexander. But sounds like they want to do more rotating at the receiver position than they have the last few years. And we'll see if they can actually pull that off. All right, finally, because we're running really late tonight, he was asked, you know, how healthy are you? And he gave a pretty detailed answer on that. So here that is.
Play. I think obviously everybody after camp or this last week is kind of banged up within reason. And I think that's one thing in camp that we try to really focus on. Like, there's a difference between being hurt and injured. And that's one of the things to me, like camp's about building calluses and learning to fight through things. And very rarely in this sport are you going to be 100%, right? Week in and week out in this league. So, you know, we try to push a lot of those guys throughout camp to fight through it and push through it and practice when you don't feel 100%, because there's going to be games that you're going to have to play and you're not going to feel 100%. And then there's some guys to me later in camp, like we did on Saturday, that, you know, are playing winning football, have got a ton of reps and experience and know what they do. So we're going to sit them and allow other guys to have those opportunities to see what we can get. So I think managing that. All right, I think you got to build the calluses for even veteran guys, you know, to be able to sustain a season while also creating opportunity for other guys. I think it's really important that haven't been in that. And so that's why we've been going in the stadium a little more than normal to try to create that environment for them, because for some reason it's just different for them in there, and making it more game-like and move the ball. Because that was the one thing I talked about in the offseason too, is just that adversity piece with some of these guys that you haven't been around and in that competitive environment, like how are they going to respond? And so I still think this week's really important for some of those question mark guys, that we still create those environments for them to have a better understanding going into game week. But outside of, I would say we're probably banged up the most probably at corner the last probably 10 days. Nothing season-ending injury at all. And we'll get all those guys back this week, slowly but surely. So just soft tissue stuff with them. But I would say during camp it's probably been corner and O-line have been the two areas where you're like, are you kind of plug and play and doing some things to where if it was a game week, you would have moved some pieces if you need to. But they're all healthy and back going in this week.
Keaton Thompson.
You get 2 minutes, two full minutes of answer on how healthy are you. And again, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean he's going to win more games or lose more games. But, you know, you ask other coaches about injuries and it's, yeah, we don't talk about injuries here. And you just move on, and you get 2 minutes of, this position probably a little bit more banged up than this one, and I'm trying to get some guys to learn how to power through it, and I'm also sitting some guys at scrimmages because it's just the detail. It's funny, actually, because what did he reveal that could damage his team's prospects to beat Louisville in 2 weeks? Nothing. But he still gave you the most important thing. He still gave you, the fan, a look into where your team currently stands. And it also did not impact whether or not they can beat Louisville or not next week. It's easy to answer questions and inform your people while also protecting the integrity of your game plan. It's really that simple. So anyway, good stuff there. Good stuff tonight all around. Really appreciate you guys being here. As always, we'll be back live on Thursday. Hopefully just football. That'd be great. If that can happen, then I'll see you guys then. Have a good night, and I'll see you Thursday.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.